would you introduce yourselves, please?
I am Bid of the Monochrome Set.
And I'm Andy of the Monochrome Set.
You got your Virgin, you got your Rough Trade, you got your Warner Brothers, you got your Cherry Red, you
sounds
got
like our ride out of Virgin.
You got 40 Trade. Years, you got Art School Band, you got Adam Ant, you got all sorts of stuff in the mix that's all mixed up. That's the revisionist history.
Yeah.
We've now covered everything that everybody else talks about, so we're done.
But I mean, people aren't interested in all the labels we've been on.
Oh, right? I am. I think the good theme for this is everything old is new again. For example, getting rights back to two records.
Dindisc wrote different contracts, unbeknown to Virgin. They wrote very specific short contracts with each of their artists.
Which was a good thing.
Yeah, well for us, yeah.
So when it reverts back, you didn't have to hire a dozen attorneys.
It has nothing to do with Virgin, you know. Anyway, Virgin's been taken over.
So how did you find out that they were yours again? Just out of curiosity.
We just looked at the diary.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Let's see, maybe
going back to your question.
Yeah.
People have asked us more than once why we're so unsuccessful. But what I haven't asked us is why we're so successful. Because in our terms, we are actually
successful. Thank you for this. Because that's down here.
We're happy with the records we make. We're happy that we can still be doing this after 40 years.
RCA went bust a long time ago. We're still going. Yeah.
But this, okay, so this is actually, or his master's voice, right? HMV. So let's go down that road, because actually that's on here. Let's go down the road of how many times can somebody write the following line in an article? They're the band that had the promise that influenced so many people, but they never rose to the level of the people they influenced. How many times can somebody write that line?
Because you can't actually, you know, it's like people read, you know, Harry Potter, but it's not the best book money can buy. You know
I would agree with that.
And that's the kind of book you've got to write if you want to sell millions. And we don't write that kind of book. We don't cook that kind of food. We don't make those kind of films. And it's not that everything commercial is rubbish, because there was a period of time, and very occasionally
when
it will happen.
When it wasn't.
Yeah, very occasionally it will happen that you get actually a talented person making a number one record. But, you know, that's what, no, people don't really buy singles for that, for like depth, you know, they don't buy it for that.
But okay, so I'm a guy that grew up with a mix of top 40 and punk and all of that, you know, but here's the thing, hooks still count.
Yeah, they
melody
do.
Still counts, lyrics, that all still counts, and that's all in there.
It's not, lyrics aren't in there, my God, no.
Well, but you know what I mean.
Nowadays.
Oh, no, but I'm talking about you. I'm talking about the fact that when people are talking about all these influences.
For if you talk about the general public, it's too much for them. What they're into now is what they've been, they're used to now, are commercial singles which have got maybe one good hook which just repeats itself constantly.
At best.
Yeah. And, you know, but the actual stagecraft and stuff is pretty much the same as it was back in the days of Dusty Springfield, just were a pretty pretty girl and whatever. Mm-hmm. But the song is rubbish, you know. Really.
Yes, it is.
And that's the way it is. It's just, you know, I'm in the rain again in Spain, you know, whatever.
Mr. Peel, right? This is a guy who, you know, would turn around and say, well, here's Teenage Kicks, and it's one of the greatest songs that ever happened. Now, somebody would listen to Teenage Kicks today and go, what's the big deal?
There's been an awful lot between then and now.
I know. But still, the basis of what a good song is, right, and the basis of success, Andy, like what you're saying, you know, this has been 40 years.
I was amazed when I listened to, the first time I listened to Smith's album, every song is in the same key. Every song kind of sounds pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what you need to be a bit to be successful.
That's
true. You have to kind of be lucky in the sense of being yourself, and what being yourself is appealing to the public, and then you carry on just being yourself, and we just experiment all the time. We shift around constantly.
Yeah, but there is still a thread in there.
there's a thread in there, but I think if we did every song and it sounded like Jacob's Ladder, then it would be different. Or every song and it was like He's Frank, it would be different, but He's Frank is nothing like Jacob's Ladder.
No, absolutely not.
And you get
not.
A certain amount of variation in Franz Ferdinand albums, you get a certain amount of variation, but virtually every song is a Franz Ferdinand song.
So yeah, speaking of them, I actually managed to find today a video of one of those songs from one of those earlier bands that
Corellia.
I was actually watching it, and I thought, and you know, people are so amazed by quote the variety quote of that band, where they put out their latest record and they're like, well, wait a minute, this doesn't sound like that. But then I went back and watched that video and realized that it actually sounds like their latest record.
Yeah. We
released The Mating Game as a single.
Yeah. Well, we released, you know, after Strange Boutique. I mean, Strange Boutique itself, the song in 1980, it was a kind of, the album itself got a huge amount of interest, and we knew we had a big fan base, and we released probably the least commercial track, but we just liked it as the best track. And the follow-up single was instrumental. It was just, we kind of just did what we fancied doing. So from an early stage, we just went ahead and did that.
The lead guitar playing over an alternate melody over a vocal melody.
Yeah.
These are things that also show a level of sophistication and thoughtfulness. You didn't just slap it together.
It's not sophistication, it's boredom. You have this you have this lead guitar player that's
like
just
that.
Saying, what am I going to do? What am I going to do now? Or something. Oh, I'll do this. You know what I mean? I'm not going to just stand there and play the chords.
Yeah, but give yourself a little bit of credit. Give yourself some credit for technique and actually, you know, studying sound.
We were very complicated.
Studying sound.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes...
We weren't interested in being part of the crowd, you know, and the crowd was like stripped down music. And that's how it started. It's like stripping down music.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Some of the simplest things.
Yeah, I mean,
are pretty
complicated. Everyone pretty much started out like that because you couldn't play Pump Rock or Genesis or Yes because we weren't good enough. We could only play three chords, and also it just didn't mean anything to us. That when you actually start playing, you want to play something like 12-bar blues and whatever, and then start writing your own songs. It's just going to be a three-chord song.
You've gotten back together. It's today we're sitting here, and you still intend to like make a record a year.
Every 18 months.
You really have that at 18 months. You've kind of clocked
that's
that
a
and
cycle.
Said
that's a cycle. That gives you time to do about a year's worth of or just less than a year's worth of promo of gigs, and then at a certain point we have to start writing.
You sure you're not with a major label? You sure? You just talked about the cycle. I'm kidding.
Yeah, because that's what you've got. No, the thing is, you've got to be like that. Bands don't understand that you've got to be professional. You've got to do things in that way. And otherwise you just, I mean, I know so many bands who just don't get anything done. You've actually got to discipline yourself to be like within the mainstream cycle of things, because that's the problem.
Well, that also forces the creative process to do its to do its thing.
I mean, it's just like I don't know, weekend football teams, like, you know, they still run themselves like a pro outfits, because you kind of got to be like that. You know?
Well, yeah, because if you do it halfway, you're not going to get it. Nothing's going to ever happen. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
But I mean, so I was watching it again. It's like today's nostalgia. I was watching the video for "I Feel Fine," really, right? And that could have been produced.
Yeah.
That look, that feel, that could have been produced when you first started out.
Yeah.
And that intentional, or just felt right?
I don't really like the idea of walking through a field and having a really fantastic video and having a horse.
wait, what's wrong? Wait, what's wrong with horses?
No, but I don't really want that.
The white Clydesdale? Come on. Next time, maybe.
That's right. I just don't want to get cold.
No, but all kidding aside,
I don't want to sit in a bloody warehouse for like hours. And
but it also
lights and things.
But it also works.
Yeah.
I mean, it works beautifully.
But you can do things like that, and you can do things and make it work, and you just don't have to, you know.
You don't have to use the technology. You just have to have the ideas.
No, you just don't need to make a big deal out of it.
So no one ever asks you this, and I realize this. This music, I mean, it takes money to go in and make stuff sound good.
Yeah.
You know, it takes good production. It takes good studios.
Yeah.
I don't get the feeling that you're the sitting in front of the Macintosh with Ableton and and recording
we
this stuff.
We go into a proper recording studio with live gear in there, and it's recorded into whatever the Windows version of Pro Tools is. And there's a brilliant studio engineer there, but it's basically part analog, part digital. But it's all live stuff, you know. And well, we spend, you know, about a month and a half, you know, off and on, recording it properly. And, you know, there's the money to do it. So.
Alternate website. I use Translate, that Japanese website.
Yeah.
I spent some serious... My daughter speaks Japanese, but she wasn't there. I'm going to show it to her afterwards. But I spent some serious time even reading the notes from Japanese fans.
Because,
you know, you can use Google Translate.
Yeah.
So I couldn't resist reading. You've got some pretty obsessive human beings who follow your every... Are you a little scared here?
Some of them can be a bit scary, but it's a little bit like... You know, you have various sects of a church. We have new sort of acolytes all the time springing up out of nowhere, and we're creating them from young people. I don't really know exactly what our appeal is in Japan, but we don't really care. You know, it's just...
You'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, we like it an awful lot as well. We love going over there. We love the people there.
Oh, underselling is bad, right?
Yeah.
Saying, well, we missed the boat is not going to happen here because you didn't miss any boat. There was no boat that showed up and you said, I'm going to jump on that boat so we make sure that we're the next, you know, whatever it is.
We never wanted to be that. My God, no. We never wanted to be just, I mean, the idea is just embarrassing, you know, to prance around.
So how do you deal with 9 out of 10 good housekeeping human beings like me who every single time want you to say, we're better than all those people, and we should have been that.
No,
because I don't think it's any we should have. I think you were, and you are.
We are better than all those people. We are actually one of the best bands in human history, but...
this was a video, so you could see Andy
that's
smiling.
That's a totally separate issue to why we weren't commercially... We were commercially successful. I mean, there was a time when we were the highest placed non-Japanese band in the charts, but... So we've had commercial success, we have sold a lot of records, but we haven't been at the same level as, you know, certain bands. And you can see it with the Buzzcocks. The Buzzcocks got in the charts loads of times because they make really good pop records, you know. But it's just a totally different kind of band.
Yeah, so I don't imagine you're going to start suddenly embracing synth drums and all sorts of other available things.
Because the lyrics are such a big part of the Monochrome set. I bet you if we put in synth stuff, you wouldn't really notice.
That's true, though.
See?
But maybe that's what longevity is. Yeah. Maybe longevity is that there is some continuity in something that's keeping people paying attention. And maybe that's a better definition of success in the long run.
Yeah. Well, I think that people are just not noticing necessarily that the lyrics are actually a big part of the whole thing. And that's really, you know, the thing.
Because you think they're paying attention to the fact that...
That's really fascinating music, that's brilliant, you know. But it's actually the lyrics are the continuity in the whole thing.
So
the way the lyrics drive the songs.
Yeah, or they're turning around saying, wow, their guitars sound a lot like the Smiths. How did that happen?
Yeah.
Which is...
But then I remember someone saying... Well, there's a band called Japan. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes, yes.
And there was a Japan fan. And just as Japan had made it kind of big, Brian Ferry kind of came back and he had a single in the charts. The Japan fans were saying, who's this old guy trying to steal Japan's look?
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside. And then I'm going to ask you to pick a bunch of songs in between.